Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here, and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals, and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Big news! Wayfair's end of season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end of season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Ohio River Valley, especially in southern Ohio, is a special place of liminal lowlands, hills, and bluffs, where high ridges stand sentinel over ancient earthworks, like the land itself is guarding something. And in this strange and sacred region, we find nestled in the foothills a highly secure and clandestine facility. Coiled across the ridges and valleys of Peach Mountain is the G.E. Peebles facility, a highly guarded propulsion test site. Is this just a testing ground for advanced technology, or does its curious location have a dual purpose, one of secret study or anomaly containment? Join us as we explore the secrets of Peach Mountain, Ohio's Area 51.
Conspiracy.
Dogman.
Sasquatch.
Homunculus.
Alien races.
Anunnaki.
Corey Feldman.
Ghost Dad.
Yes!
That's cool.
Poltergeist.
Spirit summoning.
Magicians are demons.
Anunnaki.
Close the door,
close the door!
What is the moon?
Cover-ups.
MK Ultra.
Shadow people.
Disagreements.
Quiet! I'm trying to say words with my mouth.
Vampire.
Well, hello, hello. Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Jeremy. And we are, well, missing John.
Yes, we'll get to that.
But two of the brothers of the belief hole, for now.
Yes, and on today's episode, we are going to take you on a real adventure.
Oh boy, is it.
We went there ourselves on this adventure, and it was fascinating. It was a little calamitous.
Yeah, we had some unexpected challenges, Chris.
Yes, and we'll get to those later. But first, what are we talking about today? This is the Secrets of Peach Mountain. We're going to be getting into secret facility stuff, which is always fun. I didn't know we had one where we have one. We'll get to that.
Yeah, Ohio's Area 51. I've never heard of it before.
That's right. And with secret facilities, of course, you have the typical, you know, UFO whispers, back engineered craft, secret
UFO
testing.
Whispers. What is that?
Whispers. Whispers.
I said UFO whispers, like people who can back engineer craft, like they have a special skill.
That's not what I meant.
Okay.
But I guess you'd have to have those there. Yes, and with secret facilities, you're going to have your usual UFO back engineering.
Right, allegations.
Yes, this was it was a real adventure. We're going to be breaking it down, going over what happened to us, and also what is said to go on there. Stories of back engineered craft, UFO sightings. But we're going to get into some interesting theories here around the more strange idea of containment theory, Jeremy, your pet theory.
Of course.
And also the question of whether or not this area is a legit window area. And I found some very compelling evidence to suggest that very thing. So I'm looking forward to getting into these accounts.
Yeah, well, it occurred to me when we were kind of researching the episode, we're talking about the Ohio River Valley.
Yes.
Which extends through, I think, six different states, but like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, among others. But this whole region has brought us a truckload.
A truckload.
I don't know. I couldn't think of a better
A smorgasbord?
A smorgasbord. It's presented to us a charcuterie board of the strange.
Charcuterie?
I don't know how to say that word. But go back to, you go a little east of where we were down here in Peebles and Portsmouth, mm-hmm. Wheelersburg on the Ohio River. We went down to investigate, but kind of just to get a sense of the story that we are going to be exploring today. Tipped off to us by a listener, but I just wanted to mention that you travel down this river further east and you get to Point Pleasant.
Oh, yeah.
Gallipoli, mm-hmm. the famous Mothman. This river has brought us so many anomalies. And I think, Chris, you mentioned something about a Appalachia anomaly theory that you had.
Oh, I just thought it was kind of a fun idea. Speaking of the containment idea, that this facility that is sitting right on this crest of Appalachia, looking over a region that is rife, rampant and pervasive, maybe?
Yeah.
Of high strangeness phenomenon, really bizarre encounters that we've covered on the show in the past. This is really kind of the perfect outpost. So I like that kind of visual in my mind of this being sort of outpost, among other things, which we'll get to and see how much of this actually shakes out. But
yeah,
how did we get this story in the first place, Drew? What took us on this adventure? Why don't you let everybody know?
Yeah, we were tipped off to this story, this alleged Ohio's Area 51, which I don't think he referred to that in his initial email.
Right. Because by definition, it would not be. It would be an Area 128. Or some other such.
Sure,
number.
Yeah, it would be a different one. It's also not a government facility.
Right, that's important distinction.
This is a military facility. This is a private contractor, General Electric, GE. Yeah. The facility we're talking about today is GE Peebles.
Yeah.
And the GE Peebles facility was illuminated.
Ooh. Oh, I like that. Electricity.
Yeah, see, pun. Illuminated for us by a listener of the show, former deputy sheriff of Scioto County, right down in that area, Jim Humphrey.
Go, Jim.
Thanks, Jim. Fascinating guy. I've got some interesting stories from him that actually goes beyond probably what we're covering today.
He had his own close encounter, right? We'll get to that.
He did in Wheelersburg, which is, again, right down here in this region, just down the river from Peebles in the facility.
Oh, and real quick, I wanted to mention before we get deeper into Jim's tale.
Yeah.
Earthworks, the Great Serpent Mound. This is all going to connect into this containment theory, into this energy theory, into this illumination of this site here tucked into the valley.
Yeah.
On Peach Mountain.
Yeah, GE Peebles, this facility, they purchased 7,000 acres of Peach Mountain.
Yeah.
Just adjacent to Peebles, 7,000 acres of this mountain and valleys, this kind of region for their testing of jet propulsion engines. That's the official, of course they are doing this. That's the thing. This is not a secret facility.
Yeah.
If you're listening and you're working at GE Peebles right now and, we're curious onlookers and we're presenting a theory and maybe it's so clandestine that you don't even know. What's going on there?
Compartmentalization is the word.
It's just a theory, speculative only. But 7,000 acres that they purchased on this mountain for engine testing, jet propulsion. And if you go there, which we did, some strange things might happen to you.
We don't recommend going.
No, we didn't go harass or poke around.
I'm just curious. There was no signs leading up to the road that this was on. We were just following navigation. And for what happened, I would have expected a bigger...
Warning
system before arriving. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a bit.
There were some scary moments on those curves running away from that facility. But it's interesting too. In 2015, they had an expansion. I don't know if you knew this.
Yeah, I did read something about an expansion of their facility. Because this all, I should say, was brought about during the Cold War.
Yeah.
I believe it was, right?
When they first built
the facility.
Actually, in 1954, it had opened as a rocket test facility, but then after just a year, they mothballed the project.
That's right.
At this area. But then in the mid-1960s, it reopened and started testing.
Jet propulsion, right?
Yes, jet propulsion.
Jet engines.
And the argument is that, and especially in a time of, if you guys remember, we did Phenomena. We covered the clandestine ESP and psychic research projects under the purview of the CIA that came out later. They were looking into more occult energy sources and more psi ability stuff.
Right.
Not to say that necessarily ties in here, but it's around that time. It's just interesting that this facility that is already remote for testing, this site, which is 7,000 acres, would be the perfect place to, during the Cold War, maybe start testing some other technologies.
Well, its remote location is an interesting point too, Chris, because it's, like I said, 7,000 acres. It's a lot of space.
Yeah.
And it's very rural. I mean, this area, Peebles, where we went down, cool little town, really cool town nearby. Portsmouth we stayed in, also a very
active, paranormal active zone.
Yeah. A lot of ghost groups down there,
mm-hmm.
right on the river.
A lot of UFO sightings.
Again, right in this Ohio River Valley, where there's this just kind of crack in the nature of reality, it seems. Crack in the earth.
To be fair, Area 51 is like 38,000 acres or something. So this is quite small compared to Area 51.
Well, I must have got a bit of wrong information there. But no, this is privately owned is what I'm saying.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah, this isn't a military installation.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to mention that, the rural nature of this place and of Peebles, which is the town that it was kind of nested in or adjacent to, the population there is kind of primed for secrecy. That as of the 2020 census, it was 1,774 people lived in Peebles.
Wow. That's it?
And trending downward from 2023 and 2025 estimates.
So yeah, great spot if you want to stay hidden from prying eyes.
And I don't know the employment of GE Peebles facility, but according to my research, and if you guys work there or do the numbers, let me know if I'm wrong, but facility allegedly could employ a number equal to or even exceeding the population of Peebles itself.
Hmm.
So I don't know how many people in Peebles, work at this facility. I guess the point is that whatever is going on in this area, this kind of cradle of strange, the anomalies that we've talked about, the phantoms and entities that have been born from this region, like Mothman and others, alongside the fact that we mentioned briefly, I think, in the intro, that just outside of Peebles, Stone's Throw is the Serpent Mound, the Great Serpent Mound, which is built towards the edge of a massive extraterrestrial impact zone, crater, that has produced geological, geomagnetic anomalies, a very special kind of geological structure in this area that has all kinds of other implications. It's just interesting to build this test facility here. And then with the allegations, not coming from us, but as you'll hear soon, we're piggybacking on this this idea because we never heard this before.
Right.
You know, growing up in Ohio our whole lives, I'd never heard of this. But building off of this suggestion, based on this account from Jim, our listener, who you'll hear from in a minute, that this location is the chosen place for a defense contractor facility allegedly doing reverse engineering.
Oh, yes.
It's just eerie that it is so close to the Serpent Mound that we visited that does have its very own strange and kind of beautiful energy.
Yeah.
The crater there.
That's the question. Is this all coincidence? All the crazy things that are seen in this area, the Serpent Mound connection there, the tie-in there, the secret facility. Is there more to it than stated?
As we know, water with its specific properties that we've covered a lot in this show when it comes to the paranormal, the collision of the Ohio River and the Scioto right down in Portsmouth. This whole area is just, there's so many attributes. It's interesting that they chose this location. Anyway, that's enough, I think, of setup of where we went, this beautiful, beautiful region, the lowlands surrounding it. It was just gorgeous. We'll have pictures in the show notes and probably on the screen. But to get into how it came to us.
Yes. Let's hear from Jim.
So Jim was a deputy sheriff in Scioto County from 1995 to 1999. And, you know, he spent his time on those late shifts, much like we do whenever we get a chance, driving around listening to Coast to Coast. And Art Bell, rest in peace.
I miss our Bell Bell days.
I don't need to talk about it. Let's not talk about that right now.
A trip to Taco Bell, listening to Art Bell.
Maybe we can talk about that.
Wonderful
time.
Way to spend an evening.
But yes, anyway, Jim had sent us an email of his experience driving around. And the first part of his experience, you know, as we do, as you might listen to Art Bell, and you hear kind of the crank calls of the people that will call in. You remember the classic Area 51 call?
Oh, the guy crying because he was about to be murdered.
Yeah, that's still controversial. I personally believe that that was...
Oh, what? It wasn't debunked?
I think it was debunked. And I think that sonically, it's pretty clear evidence that the guy had called in afterwards previously.
Did he sound kind of like the guy who called in and claimed to be the time traveler?
I don't know if it was a time traveler, but I've compared his call, and I think he called into another radio station or podcast later on and said it was me. Anyways, maybe we'll drop that in. But what you're about to hear is Jim's experience hearing that call for the first time.
Yes, yes.
This is called, creatively named, The Deputy and the Art Bell Call.
Oh, that'll do.
From 95 to 99, I was a deputy sheriff in Scioto County, Ohio. As with any job, the low man on the totem pole gets the last pick of shift, and I was indefinitely stuck on third, as luck would have it. For me, driving around all night meant becoming an avid listener of Art Bell, night after night, topic after topic.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
I fed my hunger for the paranormal from the high desert.
Where are you?
On one particular night, he had a caller that claimed to have been a scientist or engineer in the 70s, that was part of a team that had reverse engineered an alien propulsion system from a recovered UFO. Art appeared to take his claim serious enough to begin asking deeper questions, about the arrangement that the caller had worked under. I am paraphrasing the caller's story as I recall it from that night. My team was split into two groups. We were kept at a hotel in Cincinnati, and we would rotate a week out at a time, where we would board a small jet and fly to the mountains of southern Ohio, landing on a private runway on top of one of the mountains. We would then be driven several miles into the wilderness and arrive at the largest hangar I had ever seen, where we would begin working where the previous team had left off. He went on to describe how the engine developed thrust, which was very interesting. But being a deputy in southern Ohio and very familiar with the topography, I knew that there were no mountains in Ohio. Scioto County is like the rest of southern Ohio from Adams County eastward and full of foothills. Also, to my knowledge, there certainly weren't any runways on any foothills. His story was entertaining, but just that, entertainment.
All right, okay, so he's suspicious.
He's suspicious.
Yeah.
Lives and works in the area.
He doesn't buy it.
With the topography in the region and Peach Mountain, where could you have a runway?
Right, yeah.
Some problems with the story from a trained observer and a
technical perspective.
And an authority figure in the area who knows it. So blows it off, you know, but still finds it interesting. So I tried to find this call. Found some online archives. We're Coast to Coast Insiders membership. Link in the show notes if you're interested. We're not
affiliates
sponsored by them, but
not yet.
But you get the Art Bell Vault, a lot of great Coast to Coast recordings. Anyways, I searched that, try to find exactly what episode this might have been in, and narrowed it down. Actually, the first lead came from the Ohio Exploration Society's website. Yeah. Shout out to Jason, super cool guy who helped me. He had the original recording at one point. The only thing that remains now is a transcript on his website. He tried, but he couldn't track down his original taping of that call, that original broadcast.
And then we did have one other avenue of exploration to find this, this tape, right? We did a really great episode on Nightmare Land by Lex Nover, which is this book. So we reached out. We didn't know if he'd ever actually heard the episode, but Jeremy reached out.
Yeah, I reached out to Lex Lone Hood Nover, and also super great guy. He couldn't find it either. And as we worked on trying to dig this thing down, the best one that...
Dig it down, not up, huh?
As we worked to dig it up, I guess. In the hole, we dig it down. As we worked to get a hold of this, the closest one I could find was, it seemed like, the actual episode. But it was an extrapolation for Area 51. That was the original broadcast. The topic of the call that Art Bell did was, hey, if you're out there, if you're a whistleblower, or you work at Area 51, you can be anonymous. We won't say your name. But any information you have, we'd love to hear it. The audience wants to hear it. So when they did this kind of release of this episode, or it's in the archive online, it's an edited version specifically about calls regarding Area 51. So it appears that they cut out the Southern Ohio.
But why?
Peach Mountain Peebles facility call.
Is it still an active clandestine research facility? Or was it just not quite related to Area 51 specifically? So they...
Yeah, for whoever...
Chippity-chopped it.
That's right. They chippity-chopped it, Chris. But thanks to Jason of Ohio Exploration Society, we do have a preserved transcript of that call. And we're going to play that for you now. And again, John is not here. Sadly, we miss him.
But you're going to hear him a lot in this episode.
Yeah, and he'll be back in the next episode. But we gave him all the stories to read, so his flavor will be here throughout. So this is an adapted version of the call. So since John is the only one reading it, I basically took the back and forth from Art Bell and the caller. And this is an adapted version of all the caller's responses and information. And maybe you science-minded listeners out there, or if you're working at G Peebles, feel free to give us some feedback on this fascinating historic call.
Oh, like its credibility?
Yeah.
And the details?
What do you think?
I haven't heard it yet, so I'm interested.
Let's hear the original, an adapted version of the original transcript from Art Bell's Coast to Coast.
I don't directly work for a government agency, but over the past 25 years, I've worked for companies that were under contract to the government, back during the Star Wars era. Two things in particular come to mind, and they're interesting because they tie into what's showing up in the sky now. In the 70s, the company I worked for partnered with the government on ion propulsion down in southern Ohio. They set up a large proving ground. They actually bought an entire mountain and ran power to the site. For nearly 7 years, it operated as a combined military and private installation. About every 10 or 15 days, whenever they could get it working, They'd fire up the engines to see what kind of output they could get and try to figure out how they worked. Essentially, they didn't have a model to work from. Anyone brought into the project was just told, "Try to improve upon this. See if you can make it useful." We weren't allowed to work closely with each other. Everyone was kept in small, isolated groups. There was no open communication. Thinking back now, it should have been obvious that no one actually knew how the thing worked. But at the time, it never crossed my mind. What I saw was the frame and mountings for ion propulsion engines, or motors, or whatever you'd want to call them. These things aren't terribly large, and once you understand the principle, it's relatively basic. They manipulate the space directly around the object, making it appear solid for just a brief instant, and then push against that in small increments. It requires a fair amount of energy to function, but it's by no means impossible. In fact, there's been real progress in recent years with hydrogen cell batteries. Something the size of a car could generate around 15 kilowatts of electricity, more than enough to run an ion propulsion system. And once it's running, the whole thing moves in a very unconventional way. It's not like jets or projectile propulsion. These vehicles can nudge themselves around in any direction, and once they're moving, especially outside the atmosphere, they're just on their way. You mentioned something about flying cars. I always loved that late 40s, early 50s vision of the future. As a kid, I really believed that's where we were headed. So to find myself in the 70s, working on these things, I felt like an idiot. I couldn't catch up with what had been designed, and I didn't understand how any of it worked. Later in life, I realized none of us did. We were all going in blind.
In this next excerpt from the interview, it's unclear if the caller is referring to his work at a Southern Ohio facility, such as GE Peebles, or if it's a separate location. But if the following testimony is to be believed, it illuminates how one might be introduced or initiated into a reverse engineering program. Let's take a listen.
Later, I worked for another company. This was around 2 years into the Reagan administration, during the Star Wars program. The hiring process was strange. To prove you could work in their environment, they'd put you in a room full of unknown devices and tell you, "Pick something. Define what you think it is. Explain how it works. Try to do something with it." You had about 2 weeks. If they thought you showed potential, they'd move you forward and invest in testing you further. Most of the things in that room, I couldn't even identify. But one item I ended up working with was a traveling wave tube. I thought I didn't know what it was at the time. That technology was later incorporated into the Star Wars project. They didn't fully understand the devices, but they could manufacture them based on existing templates. They were coming off the production line at about $80,000 a piece, and if you wanted to work with them, you could have as many as you needed. Traveling wave tubes are used in modern satellite communication and navigation, especially at extremely high speeds. Interestingly, they form the basis of certain pulse beam weapons. Advanced systems that modulate energy pulses just outside the X-ray band. These systems are found in both military and private installations.
Oh man, that's awesome. I mean,
yeah,
if true. It would have been awesome to actually hear him in his own voice.
Yeah, if anyone has access to this original recording, I mean, I doubt it.
Yeah.
It's really hard to find. Despite the helpful efforts of Lex Lohnhudenover and Jason from Ohio Exploration Society, it seems like it's just lost to time.
But it's cool because when you hear it, I mean, I feel like you can hear a lot in people's voices, whether they're being honest or not,
mm-hmm.
Which we've talked about before. When John reads it, I obviously believe him.
John seems honest about this call.
But it is interesting because it's very thorough for a hoax. It sounds very convincing insofar as like describing setting up the facility.
The detail.
It would have to be somebody who, if he didn't work there, you know, it was before Google, obviously, but came up with a mythology about Peach Mountain and a combined effort between the military and the facility, the GE facility. Yeah.
And if you think about it, it's so weird because, like you said, pre-internet, it's like you could go on Reddit and, you know, look up any lore on the GE Peoples facility. Because at the time, this facility wasn't really well known.
Yeah, he could have been an Ohio people's guy.
But to your point, like the kind of detail, he could have had some connection. He could have even worked there and just made this whole thing up. Mm-hmm. But it all fits with the timeline. For instance, he said he was in contract with the government back during the Star Wars era.
Yeah.
Right. When this facility was being reworked or whatever
right.
for its jet propulsion, which it does, still does to this day. And you can look it up on the website. We have links in the show notes.
You can try to get in if you want, but it's challenging.
Oh, did
you
actually get in the facility?
Well, I mean, we didn't try to get in, but
yeah,
going up to the front gates.
We'll get into that.
Yeah.
But another thing that shows that he has an experienced knowledge, I guess mm-hmm. you could say, of this facility is he said they actually bought, quote, they actually bought an entire mountain and ran power to the site.
Right.
Now, again, GE Peebles purchased 7,000 acres of this mountain. So that all makes sense, and it works along these lines. So whoever this caller was, he had intimate knowledge, or at least had to be local, and it seems like involved to a degree.
Yeah,
that would be my take.
It's interesting, with all the buildings that are on the site, mm-hmm. you could see why Peebles would very willingly join forces with maybe some investment money from Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
To build out this huge facility. Oh, shades of Bob Lazar, for sure.
Yeah.
And insofar, especially describing his experience working on these reverse engineered crafts, the compartmentalization of not knowing exactly what you're working on. It's basically people come in, and then whenever someone gets stumped, then they just get replaced by somebody else who maybe might have an idea of how something may work.
Yeah. Well, it was also interesting, this call that, Jim had heard in mentioning the flights in from Cincinnati.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Back and forth reminds me of Area 51 and Bob Lazar talking about, was it Janus? Was that the flight?
I think that's right.
That was the...
Was that the airline?
The airline that would fly people clandestinely.
From like Vegas or something?
I think to the
airstrip at Area 51?
Yeah. Vegas or outside of Vegas, somewhere around there, into the facility and back. Eerily similar. And again, Jim's initial skepticism, well, there are no landing strips on Peach Mountain.
Right. This was kind of the damning thing for Jim, and this is where his skepticism starts to turn, right? When he gets some work later in life at this very facility, right?
That's right. At this point in time, we've moved along into the future, and he is no longer working as a deputy sheriff. He is now working in construction. And synchronistically, he lands a gig at the very site that he heard about years ago, and it changes his mind.
Let's hear it.
This is called Peach Mountain Revealed.
Fast forward several years and a career realignment, and I'm working construction. The company I worked for had won a bid to locate fuel and electrical conduit that was buried around a couple test pads at GE Pebbles in Adams County, which borders Scioto to the west. The site takes up a very large area in which they rebuild jet aircraft engines. Once the engine rebuild is complete, it is transported to one of several massive structures, where it is bolted into and fed fuel while engineers fire it up and put it through its paces. Think of it like this. There are engines that have a 15-foot intake ring. I believe they were for 787s or the like. The hangars that these engines would be worked on in were massive airline hangars. The pads where the rebuilt engine would be bolted into were big enough to support and hold those massive engines at full throttle while tests were being done. The sheer scope of this plant is beyond massive. Oh yeah, the pad at the top is where they test fighter jet engines at that time. The hill it is mounted on is named Peach Mountain. Guess what? It has a runway that hasn't been used since the early 80s, but was once very active with small jets. The equipment operator I was working with and I were doing exploratory digs, and I would uncover any lines that were visible with a shovel. It was a very slow process, and the blueprints we had been given didn't match what had been done in the field. Most anyone who has worked with blueprints has had this problem. The plant engineer had made several trips to the pad we were working on, and concerned with our slow progress, decided to take us to look at a collection of construction photographs and records he had. They were always renovating a pad or planning a new one. While they looked through files and pictures, I was fixated on the image on his back wall. The entire property at the GE Pebbles plant encompasses thousands of acres of woods. Since childhood, I have heard stories of hunters accidentally trespassing onto the southern part and being met with paramilitary troops in all black with fully automatic weaponry to warn the hunters to turn around. At GE Pebbles, there was a whack-and-hut security. Definitely not the paramilitary I had always heard of. Here on his wall was an aerial photo of the whole property, woods and all. It was 8 feet tall and roughly 10 feet wide, with an outline that met the edges in many places. In the top right corner, in an area that was no more than 6 inches by 6 inches, was the GE Pebbles test pads, massive hangars, and the Peach Mountain runway. The image was too small to see any detail, but there was enough to make it out. There was also the top roofline of the old farmhouse still standing at the entrance to the property, and I could make out the road that passes the house and goes into the woods. In many places, the road would disappear due to the coverage of the trees, but as I kept looking, this single road would make many turnbacks and hairpin curves as it wound its way into the center of the image and what appeared to be the roof of a structure that took up an area of roughly 3 inches by 3 inches. There was nothing else there. One road terminating into one building, miles into the wilderness. The caller was telling the absolute truth. I stood there in shock and couldn't say anything for fear of sounding like an idiot. I just reveled in my newly found knowledge. I have no doubt that we are being visited. I am also a witness to one that lit my cruiser up one night in the summer of 98, but that is a story for another time.
Huh. Yeah.
Interesting. So, first, runways, mm-hmm. right? He didn't think that there would be any way you could have runways up there, but he came across some that were, had been abandoned, it sounded like, in the 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
And then that strange facility deep in the mountain that where the road terminates into this giant hangar, it sounds like.
Yeah. Solitary road leading to a large isolated structure
mm-hmm.
deep in the woods. The chances that you're going to get a job yeah. and wind up on the mountain and be in a position to see that aerial photo
Sweet.
Confirming, yeah, an old Arbelt call, that's pretty amazing. And you heard him mention that he had his own encounter.
Yes, yes. So I want to hear that.
That's coming up. So that's a part of Jim's kind of experience with the strange and unusual, something that lit up his cruiser.
Yeah.
Like a story that we'll hear coming up.
Here now.
But before we get to Jim's story and his further experiences with the weird, I wanted to hang on GE Peebles for just a moment longer and get into kind of the real world experiences with the facility that you might have as a wayward wanderer, an explorer like ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Because we went down to the facility because we wanted to just explore the region and get a sense, you know, since we were doing the episode. And since Jim's a listener, and he offered to give us a tour of his experience that he had that you guys will hear coming up, his very close encounter. But going down to that region, we thought we'd stop by.
Yeah, it was less of a real investigation where we just wanted the environment and we were
yeah.
curious.
Yeah, we wanted to kind of see what the area was really like.
Yeah.
And it was very affecting, like the feel of the area and that the lowland kind of Ohio River Valley was beautiful and strange.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. But going to find the facility
yeah.
was a very specific experience. And I want to play an experience from Jason of Ohio Exploration Society.
Oh, that's right, because you said he had kind of a similar situation as to what we had.
Yeah, so on his website, on Peebles, which by the way, like, I don't think there's much out there about this facility. And his website, it's Ohio Exploration Society, preserved this kind of information. He posted a video from sightings with Tim White. Great show.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we'll play a clip.
Old school.
And they covered it back in the 90s. But there's not a lot of information about this place. It's not really heavy in the lore. But Jim tipping us off to this kind of, for us, created this sense that there is something here and there is this kind of, you know, whatever. So anyways, we went there. We had a very similar experience to what you're about to hear from Jason from Ohio Exploration Society. And the Ohio Exploration Society, just to say what they do, is they explore...
Ohio.
Good call. Yes. Ohio mysteries, paranormal hotspots, what have you. A lot of great information. So we'll have that link down below in the show notes or maybe a QR code scrolling across the screen if you're watching on YouTube. Definitely check it out. But anyways, they decided with all the lore that they were hearing at the time, because the Art Bell call, sightings, they wanted to check it out themselves. And they did. And this is what they experienced.
Ohio Exploration Society visited the GE Peebles test operation facility in January and February of 2007. While the GE facility is not abandoned or historic, we decided to visit this mysterious facility as it is often referred to as Ohio's Area 51, located just southeast of Peebles in Adams County. The facility was intended to test rockets when it opened in 1954, but those plans never came to fruition. In 1965, GE began using the Proving Ground to test propulsion systems, some of which were reportedly secret government projects. The OES has found several transcripts backing the claims of secret government projects taking place at the installation, including work on an ion propulsion system that was seemingly being reverse engineered in the late 1970s to mid-1980s. GE makes no attempt to hide the facility. There is a sign along the road pointing to the main gate, but once you approach the gate, you immediately encounter a no trespassing sign. In fact, GE purchased 7,000 acres of the Peach Mountain area and public roads were gated and closed. No trespassing signs posted every 30 to 50 feet. Aerial imagery shows the facility has a runway and several buildings. During our first trip in January, our vehicle was nearly run off the road by a large SUV as we approached the main gate. The SUV flashing their high beams and coming across the double yellow line at our car. We were then tailed by two pickup trucks into the nearby town of Rarden. Later in the evening, we spotted what looked like the same SUV we had encountered at the main gate at a gas station in Peebles. The driver was wearing Digi camo fatigues. During each trip, we were able to hear the sounds of jet engines being tested at our nearest vantage point, an oddly placed church just south of the runway.
Man, that's so weird.
Isn't that weird?
It's so much like our experience.
Yeah, SUV.
So we were going down, and we'll play a bit of this here, but we went to find it just out of curiosity. Didn't know how.
Just want to see the gate, like see the facility as far as like, which you can see in photos on the OES website, Ohio Exploration Society website, as well as when sightings went there.
Yeah. I honestly didn't think it was going to be a big thing, especially considering like the sightings that was in the 90s. And driving up to the road that you turn down to get to the main entrance, there was the only thing I saw, there were no posted signs like people's ahead, no trespassing, be wary of.
Right. On this little road that essentially goes nowhere except for the facility.
Well, before you get to that road. So we're approaching that road and navigation saying, go right here to Peebles facility, GE facility. Like dead ahead is, as you keep going just down the normal road, there's like a sort of a bridge guardrail thing, not a true bridge, but like a guardrail. Then on the other side of the guardrail was a white SUV that just reminded me in that moment.
That was a truck, a white truck parked.
Parked right on the other end of that, just like sitting on the shoulder.
Yeah,
kind of almost in the grass on the shoulder.
Very surveillance kind of.
Yeah, it definitely had that vibes when you watched like, you know, old Area 51 footage when like Bob Lazar would go or whoever.
Yeah, you'd have the white trucks or whatever, like kind of like watching and imposing.
But I didn't really think that was what that was. That can't be that, right? And then we turn right down the road that takes you to the main gate. And once you get there, there's a big white sign that says GE testing facility, Peebles, GE Peebles.
Something like that, yeah.
And then to the right is
staff parking.
A road that takes you to staff parking, according to the sign. And I was like, oh, crazy. Okay, we'll turn around here in the road.
So we stopped at that moment just to turn around. And I took a photo of just the, you know, the entrance gate or whatever. Then right as I took the picture, I noticed, you know, of course, a security camera, big bulbous security camera.
You're like, there's a security camera.
There's a camera there. And then we, you know, we didn't do anything suspicious. Well, I guess other than the photograph, but I don't know that you would see that. I'm pretty subtle.
They must have seen.
It was just a picture of the outside anyway.
So we turn out of there back onto the road that takes you down to the main road.
Yeah, we turned around and then you started heading back down that road that leads to the main road. And only a few minutes or a few moments later.
Yeah, I just looked into my rearview mirror right after I turned around that corner. And then out of nowhere, it must have come right over the hill on the other side of that sign, SUV right on my bumper. I was going fast at that. Well, once I could make the turn, I was going fast, but it followed us like bumper to bumper. We have some video. We'll play it now.
All right, recording this in case anything happens to us. It's pretty crazy, man. Like, I heard about this in the 90s. Look behind me, there's a truck going on our butt. There's a truck right on our...
Okay, he turned.
Yeah, so...
It was kind of scary because there were some really tight turns there and...
Well, it was just, it was aggressive in the sense that like...
I probably should have been more scared, but I was just kind of entertained and astonished that was actually happening in that moment. I wasn't expecting a reaction like that.
Well, it's weird because there was no like... There were no warning signs. There were no posted, you know, this is a highly sensitive area.
Yeah.
Beware, stay clear. It was nothing like that. It's literally like we could have just gone down the wrong road and turned around. It's odd to think that, you know, it's a private installation.
Yeah.
It's not a government property. I guess maybe defense contractor.
Still security, obviously.
Obviously heavy security, but as like a private citizen just driving down a road, stopping and turning around, to have such an aggressive push, like, yeah, they were riding your tail really aggressively for a while.
Sending a message.
Until we finally kind of made out of the area and then they took a separate road. But it was exactly like the experience of OES, as they described in their story.
Yeah. So don't try it going there.
I mean, I don't think you're going to get.
Well, I'm just saying, don't
go in.
Don't blame us if you go. That's all we're saying.
We're not saying we shouldn't have like a mass, you know, exodus down to like they did for Area 51. Right. It was so fruitful.
Yeah.
But just weird. I mean, that just furthers the kind of, I mean, again, if it's a defense contractor, it's, you know, there's proprietary technology being tested, jet propulsion. It just seemed oddly aggressive.
Yeah, and it seemed less corporate, more military as far as the response.
Well, that could just be the whatever security
that's
they have.
That's true. That's true.
Hired for it. But
anyway, that doesn't prove anything,
something's
obviously.
Something's going on, Chris.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. But speaking of that intense security, Chris, that got me thinking. These guys were aggressive. It bothered me at the time being on the receiving end, but then I thought, man, I wish these guys worked for me. Imagine if you could grab them up and inject them into your computer so they could chase down your intruders. All the ugly-hearted, soul-eating scammers and hacker animals out there. Because you know just how animal predators aim for the slowest prey. Hackers target people with the weakest security. And if you're not using ExpressVPN, well, you're the prey. We've all heard the stories. Bank logins, passwords, personal photos, they all get scooped up by some goblin who watched a YouTube tutorial. And then they turn around and sell your info for up to $1,000 a pop. That's your money, your life, not theirs. But they slurp it up like the online parasites they are. ExpressVPN is your shield against these digital demons. It wraps your internet activity in an encrypted tunnel, blocking the warlocks and data thieves lurking in the ether. Now, I've run into these jerks before, so whenever I leave the studio, one tap on the app and I'm protected, whether I'm on my laptop, phone, or whatever device I haven't lost or broken this week. Because you guys know, there's a lot of weirdness out there. It's a beautiful world, but we all know the darkness, and it can take any form. A mimic in the woods? Sure. Dogman at your door? Absolutely. But more often, right inside your computer. That's why I use ExpressVPN. It's just one less thing to worry about in this freaky, crazy world.
Yes.
Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/whole. That's expressvpn.com/whole to find out how you can get up to 4 months, wow, 4 extra months for free. Check the link in the show notes, or if you're watching on YouTube, snap a shot of the QR code on the screen. Now let's get back into the strange of the Ohio River Valley in Southern Ohio.
But I want to hear Jim's brush with the paranormal.
Yeah. Okay. So Jim, who brought us this story to begin with, and woke us up to this facility and the kind of mysteries down there, he's had experiences. And what we're about to hear is his brush with something otherworldly, certainly advanced technology of some kind. And this took place in Wheelersburg. So if you go, I think it's east away from Peebles where the facility is, away from Serpent Mound. You'll hit Portsmouth, where we stayed for a night. And then I think it's a little south, just I don't know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes or something, is Wheelersburg. And Wheelersburg is where Jim was on patrol one night and had this pretty incredible experience. This is called The Craft and the Deputy, Jim's Close Encounter.
It was around 0300 to 0400 on a hot August morning in Wheelersburg, Ohio. I was on patrol as a deputy sheriff when a craft appeared in the sky. It was no more than 60 feet above me, the height of the tallest trees in the area, and was approximately 100 feet from outboard, amber light to light, with a roughly 10 to 15 foot wide white light under the center. I leaned out of the driver's window to see the center light directly above me. I quickly drove to the upcoming intersection and turned, stopped, and got out of the car in one motion. When I looked back, I saw the craft had canted and was showing the center light in my new location. It then shot away at set angle and had disappeared from sight within no more than 3 seconds. I drove to the highest location in the area and watched the skies for an extended amount of time before driving to a payphone and radioing our desk sergeant to call me at the payphone number. I asked that any reports of lights in the sky from the hours before be forwarded to me. Nobody else had seen it, but I was forever teased by other deputies afterward. Thanks for what you guys do. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you, Jim.
Fascinating. I mean, that the canter, the side tilt, I mean, that sounds just like what was not only described here, but also described by Bob Lazar. And also what you see in that FLIR footage that was leaked or declassified, 2016?
Which footage are you talking about?
The one from the Pentagon where this thing's traveling and it's like a FLIR footage, so over water, and it's kind of like, I don't know if that's infrared or what exactly that is, but it's going traveling and then it kind of turns on its side. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't think so.
You remember that one?
Was this one that split into two?
No, it's like the water? It's like the classic from the Pentagon paper.
Yeah. It does this kind of thing. It's flying, kind of looks like it's flying at an angle.
How did I not just describe that?
Sorry, you did.
We'll play it here.
Dude, this is a f***ing drone, bro. There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. Oh, whole thing, dude. That's not our LNS, though, is it?
It's not. It is an LNS, dude.
Well, if there's like...
Look at that thing.
It's rotating.
So yeah, it just lines up right with that. So did he see something out of this world, or was this back engineered thing, or was this, you know, obviously the ongoing question, is this something they were working on all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, and I should mention, going back to Jim's account, well, you have this experience. You want to know, is this something that other people experienced?
Yeah.
He investigated and found there were no other witnesses to that specific event.
Yeah. It was in the story.
But he did find that within, I think, a 20-year span, just in that half a mile to maybe a 2 mile zone, there were 7 other reported sightings right where his occurred.
Awesome.
Yeah. So again, that was Wheelersburg, Ohio. And if you're really interested, I followed up with him. He did provide the exact location.
Oh, cool.
So the sighting took place across from the Patriot truck stop on Ohio 522 at the intersection with US 52 in Wheelersburg. The payphone was at the BP gas station on Center Street and Ohio River Road, which is now a Marathon station.
If we need all this information.
No, but I like to, you know, if you guys are interested in legend tripping or whatever, you just want to see the area. The High Point, which I was curious about where he went to.
That'd be interesting to see.
That was where he went to watch the sky. It was just before the cul-de-sac at the top of Patriot Ridge.
Okay.
There in Wheelersburg. So
we should go.
Yeah.
Get some cool goggles.
He offered to give us a tour. We just happened to leave the day after we reached out to him. But yeah, it would be great to go back down there.
Yeah.
The region beyond Peebles, beyond the UFO, you know, lore, you have all the stuff we talked about, Mothman and just this kind of undulating energy down there. And
plus the great earthworks.
The Serpent Mound.
There's other mounds down there, other earthworks.
Yeah.
You know, Serpent Mound specifically built by, and maybe those two, built by a mound building people that we still don't know for sure who they were or when they were built. Even the experts will say they're not sure.
Yeah, this is a weird thing. So we went to the Serpent Mound, which we're going to get into a little bit shortly here.
After the break.
It was funny because all the signs were very certain. And if you follow the work of Graham Hancock or any kind of alternative history researchers, I guess you could say, on archaeology and the past, you've probably heard of the Serpent Mound and the controversy or the controversy, which Graham might say. I don't know. Does he say it that way?
Probably.
Sounds like an English way. Of when it was built and who built it. But it's funny because you go there and there's no specific evidence tying it to any civilization other than we know that at a certain point in time, there's carbon dating that these other people live there. Mm-hmm. So it may have been them. So it's attributed to them. There are other, I believe they have burial mounds as well. They're actual burial mounds. Yeah. But the signs at Serpent Mound at the kind of historic site, they'll say very clearly, this is who did this. This is when they did this. But you, as you say, Chris, you go to the museum and what did you ask them? You said,
oh, it wasn't me. It was the guy in front of me who was buying something. I don't even know if he asked or anything, but the park ranger or the attendant at the desk wanted to make it very clear as they went to go walk around the serpent. She was just emphasizing the fact that we still don't know who for sure built them and how old they actually are.
Right.
Which was interesting to hear I don't know why she was so emphatic about it, but I thought that was pretty cool.
Probably to push back against, because the signs are very certain, the posted like
maybe
history signs, but it's a really cool place. You guys should definitely check out Serpent Mound if you haven't been there.
Or maybe they know that mystery sells and they want to push the mystery even further.
Maybe.
But yeah, obviously, you know, we're not getting deep into that today, but I think the gist of Graham Hancock's pushback against the official dating is that he believes it aligns more closely to, among other things that are evidentiary, potentially, the alignment makes more sense solstice-wise. If you go back further in time, right around the time of the melting of the glaciers.
The end of the Ice Age.
Yeah, basically his theory that connects, you know, a lost civilization to a lot of more advanced civilizations that developed throughout the last several eons,
yeah,
centuries or whatever.
Well, I think his argument was that you had, if you guys don't know, the Serpent Mound, which is tucked into this, you know, extraterrestrial impact zone, this giant crater, which is crazy to look at when you're there. You can just see the kind of rim of the crater out miles around you. Mm-hmm. It's just, what is it, a few miles south of where the glaciers stopped.
Yeah.
Before they began receding and the Ice Age was ending.
It's another sort of like element of a crumb of potential evidence.
That it's it would have been a very special and sacred spot at that time. Like the glaciers have stopped.
This giant bulldozer.
Yeah, this giant bulldozer just plowing the earth stopped right here at this point. Why don't we make this a special place? Let's carve this earthen effigy at this location to, you know, and there's so much lore and,
I have my
and
own
suggestion
theory.
We can go into that. Yes, you do. Do you want to get into that after we?
Yeah, we'll be getting into that later. I have a more wild theory.
Okay.
Well, but I think it's fun. But yeah, after the break, we're going to come back. We're going to come and we're going to discuss some other crazy encounters in this region, some really high strangeness ones that aren't particularly ET experiences.
Window area sightings.
Yes, window area sightings. I've got a tale of a 7-foot-tall, two-legged, armless, gray being of some kind by a trained observer.
Okay.
That's coming up. We're going to be getting into some omens and some whispering in the woods from one of our own listeners and a couple classic UAP or UFO close encounters. So stick around. We'll be coming right back with that.
All right, guys. We'll see you in a bit.
In the expansion, on this week's Members Only episode, we crack open a cornerstone of UFO lore and explore the story of Charles Hall, an Air Force weather observer who allegedly spent years among a race he called the Tall Whites, who were living underneath the sands of Nellis Air Force Base. These strange alabaster beings drifted through the sagebrush like ghosts. As he tells it, they were forming an alliance with the U.S. government, building a network of underground bases for the purposes of mutual benefit. Join us as we break into the bunker and listen to the firsthand testimony of the strangest cases in UFO lore. And now a clip from this week's expansion episode.
And we're talking about a very tiny base. If you've been there for 6 months, you know where every rock is, you know where every board is. I said, the master sergeant told me that you would show me the other four weather shacks. And he looked palsied with fear. Then he and I got back in the truck and we went back down to the intersection between the Range 3 and the Range 1 road some miles back. And we started the long drive down to Range 1. And at first he was going more or less 40 miles an hour. They were gravel roads. He kept driving slower and slower. And then when we were coming through the mesquite where it overhangs the road and you couldn't turn around, you were committed to going all the way to the dry lake bed just to turn the truck around. He kept driving slower and slower. And you could see he was getting more and more afraid. I was really surprised because when I looked out there, there was nothing to be seen. You're looking at the desert in the summertime, sagebrush. And he had slowed to low gear and 5 miles an hour. And I said, well, you're going to have to turn into Range 1 just to turn the truck around, because he was shaking with fear. We got into the gravel area, and there was the control tower for Range 1 and the skip bomb area. And I was expecting him to park the truck and take me over and unlock the shack. And he was still sitting there, and he had the truck looking out over the desert to the southeast, and he was shaking in terror. And he was saying, do you see anything, you know? And I said, well, there's nothing to be seen. And he said, it's a hot day. They got to be out there.
Wow.
That would be real creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, that environment is just perfect for, you know, ghost stories.
Desert shack,
That would definitely be scary if someone was that freaked out about something and you just didn't understand why.
Yeah.
You've heard the teaser, but that was only a taste. Inside the expansion, 100 plus ad-free episodes, the full 30-episode first season, and our live stream archives. Want in?
Yes.
Head to beliefhole.com and hit the big red expansion button.
All right, guys, welcome back from the break. We hope you enjoyed that clip of this week's members-only episode.
That's right.
And now we're back on the mountain.
And what a mountain it is, Chris.
Indeed.
Mountain of Strange.
The secrets of the peach.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Secrets of the peach.
Yeah, now we're going to get even weirder. And getting back to the mountain, before we go over to the Serpent Mound and talk a little bit more about the potential connections there.
Yeah, because there are.
Yes. I wanted to go to, well, first I want to start off with some sightings near the facility. And I want to start off with sort of a basic sighting. Not basic because, you know, it's going to be a little unusual, but it's going to be a far cry from some of the Stranger Things coming up.
That's weird. That was weird because that reminded me, that made me think of that song Basic Being Basic by Joe.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Basic Being Basic. Mm-hmm. That was a really good singing version of it.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts.
And then you said, and Stranger Things.
Nice.
That guy's in Stranger Things.
Okay. Anyway, back to the mountain.
No accidents in the belief hole. Sorry. Back to the mountain.
All right. So this first tale comes from New Fork. I got a few accounts from New Fork. And this is interesting, actually. Jerry, I want to show you something.
Yes.
If you will notice here, right here, we have Peach Mountain. Okay. Just below the Sinking Springs. You see Peebles here, just to the northwest, right?
Yeah.
Now, check this out. This is a screenshot from New Fork and the sightings in this area from 1974 to 2013. And if you look here, all this is kind of covered up, but notice what's interesting here. This is Peebles.
Mm-hmm.
10 sightings here.
Just in Peebles.
And then if you look around, one over here, two there, four there, a little better, three, four, one, but right in Peebles, 10 sightings.
Okay.
Which, you know, I mean, kind of makes sense because of the testing facility. Although, I believe GE, they say,
I know where you're going,
that they don't do any flight testing there. It's just right on the ground testing.
Yeah, just engines, not actual craft.
Yes. They have said in response to inquiries that Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is not far away, does fly over their airspace to do testing. So this could account for some of these accounts.
But it's weird that it is specifically in Peebles there's so many, and there seems to be a bit of a drought around. I mean, it is kind of a rural area, but yeah, a whole cluster in Peebles.
Yeah, and who knows what's on MUFON? Now you have to pay like $400 a year to get access to their archives. Sadly, but
no, I think it's a great point that you point out that you have a cluster in Peebles and, well, yeah, it's a testing facility,
mm-hmm.
but again, they're not flying things, allegedly, but they do have a landing strip.
Yes?
Is it just to fly in those rotating shifts from Cincinnati that are meant to be kept hush-hush or something else?
But let's hear what you guys think. Does this sound very pedestrian to you? This account comes from New Fork. This I call technical difficulties.
My satellite reception got bad. I got out to see if the weather is bad since I didn't hear any storm sounds. Looked up, there was a round ball of light right above my house. Difficult to assess how high since it was night, but it was the size of a small car hovering in place. I turned the porch light to get a better look. It moved silently and swiftly all the way to the horizon over the field in front of my house. Must have been several miles in less than a couple seconds, judging by the fact that it traveled enough to change its size from a small car to the size of a bright star. It remained then over that field. I called my wife to see, and I turned the porch light off within a few seconds of doing so. It dimmed and disappeared at the same position of the horizon where it was hovering. I'm ex-military and a physician, and observation is my profession. I have never seen a star or comet or even any type of man-made aircraft moving in this way.
This was in Peebles?
Yes, this was in Peebles. And again, trained observer, love those stories. also silent, mm-hmm. right? And another interesting feature of this sighting just reminded me of the recent New Jersey drone sightings that we covered, car-sized.
Very interesting. And it didn't say something about being able to change shape?
Well, yeah, I think it might have been just referring to the fact that it moved so fast that it became very small in a very short amount of time going off into the distance.
Okay.
But yeah, again, not super high strangeness yet, but I thought it was a nice flavor of things to come.
It's pretty strange. And yeah. It does remind me of an account coming up also near Peebles, which is in Serpent Mound, another ball of light, or a ball of light in tandem with another strange light, but same kind of idea.
Yeah.
Silent balls of light. Anyway, what do you have next?
Okay, this one is strange. I like this one a lot. This is also from, this one doesn't come from New Fork. This one I found in the Highland County Press. This happened just north of Serpent Mound, actually. Do I have that pictured here? I think I do.
What was that?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Bing! I was going to do Serpent Mound reveal. The location of Serpent Mound.
The snake from Robin
Hood? If you're watching on YouTube, I put a little snakey-do to show you where Serpent Mound is in relation to Peebles here. And then down here we have Portsmouth, which was another kind of a high hotspot. But again, you have this line here.
Yeah.
Of strangeness and Serpent Mound right in the middle, which we're going to get into that. We're going to get in the middle of that soon.
I love that Serpent Mound depiction.
I thought you'd like that.
Robin Hood, the animated classic.
But yes, Highland County Press. This happened Friday, December 12th, 2014. I call this the Grey Walker.
A resident of the Carmel community has reported seeing a strange creature along Carmel Road on Friday, December 12th. Ron McLone, an investigator with MUFON, said, quote, "The witness was driving near Carmel on December 12th, 2014, came up over a hill, and saw a 7-foot-tall, slim gray creature with muscular legs that walked like its knees were backwards." The 60-year-old former Marine who allegedly saw the creature also said it didn't seem to have arms. He also included a sketch made shortly after he arrived home, and he's quoted as saying, quote,
"I would like to get this information out in your area in hopes that maybe someone else has seen it, or that their giant crossbred ostrich got loose or something. We recently bought a place in the Fort Hill area in Southeast Highland County. We first noticed after about 30 days of living here that we suddenly have a perfect circle that stays fresh, green, no matter what weather in our front yard. On Friday, the 12th, we were driving home. After turning on Carmel Road, we went around the curve by the Carmel Church and then up a small incline. And approximately 10 feet over the incline and in front of our truck, the alien ran across the road and into the woods. My husband saw it. He is a skeptic, almost 60 years old, and a proud Marine. He wouldn't have admitted to seeing it if he hadn't been in shock. I had him draw it for me when he got to the house. He says it was asphalt gray and about 7 feet tall. No arms that he could see, but muscular in the legs area. No jawline, and its legs were bent backward, and it leaned forward as it ran." Yeah, so weird, right?
Yeah. Okay, so
a tinge of Skinwalker Ranch feeling now with this window area theory, anyway.
Yeah, well, they referred to it as a ostrich-like?
Ostrich hybrid alien 7-foot-tall creature.
Man, it's funny because this is just the kind of thing that would come out of this area. Seems like I'm thinking of like early Mothman reports in Gallipoli, which is just across the river from Point Pleasant.
Yeah.
And some of the descriptions, they came up with the skeptical explanation of Sandhill Crane.
Yeah.
Which we've seen recently around here in northeastern Ohio.
Right. Awesome to see, but definitely not mistakable for a very tall Mothman creature.
Definitely not a Mothman on the ground. There were reports that I read about an entity flying with a long neck. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, a long-necked bird with giant wingspan. That sounds like, you know.
But Mothman doesn't have a long neck. There's no neck.
No, but one of the reports that was attributed. So I could see why there was some confusion, some conflation. Because some of the reports, I'm sure, in the strange hysteria going on, or even maybe they weren't aware of the other Mothman sightings and they just saw something strange in the sky. It happened to be a long-necked bird thing. Mm-hmm. The reports came out around that time. But the other accounts... like the first witness, I forget his name, kid driving along the road, witnesses a 10-foot-tall entity.
Yeah.
That just sounds,
I mean, so much like this as far as 7 feet tall, no arms, muscular in the legs, no jawline, legs bent backwards.
Mm-hmm. Arrival style.
As it ran. I can't imagine what practical explanation, what earthly explanation you can have for that.
I mean, there are like emu farms and ostrich farms.
That's true.
But they're not typically asphalt gray.
Well, they have the bulbous body.
Right. They're not thin. This is slim.
Yeah.
But the height and the muscular legs, I get that. But this is interesting. So I looked up where this is exactly, and guess where this was sighted? Only 2 miles from the Fort Hill Earthworks, the place that we stopped at on our way out. So just right in this area, is there a connection?
Window area.
Yes.
I want to go back, man. I want to go back down. Will. Spend more time.
Don't you worry. But yeah, I just wanted to get that in there because it was, again, pushing the window theory.
Yeah.
I wanted to find a really bizarre one and I didn't have to look very hard.
Yeah, it's not just lights in this area, not just craft seen.
Right.
As fantastic as those accounts are, like our listener Jim's, but...
It is sometimes maybe absurd sounding for some people. The containment theory idea, this is a great inclusion, I think, in this episode for this region.
Yeah.
Being some sort of strange containment zone.
The Valley of Fear.
Oh, that's, well, maybe a little heavy, but...
It's a little heavy. The reason I say that is because...
The Valley of Fun.
The Valley of Fun. It is fun. And it's strange. I didn't tell you this, but Jim, I wrote back to him asking him some more details about the location and stuff. And he wrote back. And one of the things that he mentioned was that he's actually part of an investigation group that pursues hauntings and that kind of stuff,
awesome.
Which is awesome.
A lot of that around there too.
Be cool to pick his brain about that. But he's collected a lot of reports of anomalous activity. But it's just funny because... The Valley of Fear, apparently he was in communication with a TV network because he had pitched them a concept. I think it was based on his experiences and like real on the ground kind of phenomena that he had been investigating. And they came back with an idea. His idea was, which I think we've seen people try to do this since he pitched this initially. His idea was to do, basically, he goes to a place that is allegedly haunted, and it's kind of a Big Brother type situation where there's like cameras and stuff, and you know, whatever you kind of catch on camera can be investigated. And they told him, well, they were interested in the idea, but there were a lot of those ideas that have been floating around, I guess, in Hollywood or wherever the past decade. And I think we've seen one or two since then. So they're like, no, we're not really interested in that right now, but we have a counter idea, which is the Valley of Fear. And basically, they wanted to take like what he was kind of investigating, but then they kind of had this sensationalist, absurdist kind of twist.
Yeah.
And it never...
Not that we ever do that. Intentionally.
No, not intentionally. But it didn't gain any traction. You know, it was a shame because there were a lot of interesting reports. And one of the reports that maybe we'll talk to him about at some point, if you're interested in the Dog Man.
Oh, yes. That was going to be another rabbit hole I was going to go down, but we just didn't have time. But there are some interesting things related to that.
Again, window area, these kinds of entities. But
well, I guess we talk about that when we get to Supermount a little bit, because remember that realization we had on the road.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's a great point. That's coming up, the connection with mounds and
oh, we'll get there.
Werewolves. I'll just say werewolves. But yeah, anyways, he interviewed someone who had a very strange experience with someone in the area with a short-haired, human-faced, dog-man-like entity.
We've had one of those.
Yeah.
Reported on the show before.
I think I remember.
Yeah.
Anyways, it sounds like he has a lot of interesting encounters like that, but it goes back to the point that this seems like more of a window area.
Yeah.
And maybe is it a coincidence that GE Peebles would put a testing facility, allegedly testing or trying to reverse engineer technology in this area that is placed right near the Serpent Mound, which is tucked in this crater of geo-extraterrestrial nature with this impact, the unique rock characteristics beneath the earth.
Yeah.
Is it all coincidence?
Right. And right on the precipice of Appalachia, where we have all these strange accounts. Speaking of strange accounts and speaking of sticking with the window area, before we get back into the aerial phenomena, I had one more, and this comes from a listener that is not quite UFO related, but is more of the spooky bent and just kind of interesting. All right. This comes to us from, well, anonymous, but we have her name. This happened in Adams County as well. I call this omens, tokens, and voices in the woods.
Living in rural Ohio, you are completely surrounded by hills, valleys, and forest. A lot of the homes here are either right on the edge of the woods or right in the middle of it. My mom's house is in the woods, and she has no neighbors except for me. One day, she calls me and tells me to go outside to see if I can hear music playing. I went outside, but I didn't hear anything. She came to my house about 20 minutes later and said that she had been outside sweeping off the porch and thought she heard people talking. And when she listened again, she realized it was music. She said she checked inside and the radio and computer were all turned off. By the time she went back outside, she could still hear it, but the sound was coming from a different spot now. The song she heard in the woods was an old song from World War I called Over There by George Cohan. We don't know what she heard, but it was creepy and freaked her out a little. That was not the first time something like this has happened on our road. Back in the 90s, when I was a little girl, my grandpa heard a voice that sounded just like mine, calling his name so naturally, he thought my mom had sent me next door to visit them.
Grandpa! Grandpa! Grandpa!
But when he went outside to see if I had made it across the road, no one was there. He called Mom and asked me if she had sent me to their house, but she told him it couldn't have been me because I hadn't even got home from school yet. Both of the events took place in the middle of the day and near to each other. My granny always said that when you hear things like voices from nowhere or the sound of things falling or crashing, but when you go check everything is fine, it's called a token. And it's mostly a bad omen, or a sign that big changes are on the way.
Man.
Creepy.
Yeah. Old music playing in the forest is always fear fodder.
Well, yeah, the initial World War I, over there, right. Over there. I mean, that also
over
reminds...
Over here, over there?
Was that the lyrics? The window area idea.
Yeah.
Like the time overlap, dimensional right. overlap. That's just a weird kind of connection. Unrelated, the listener, obviously, who submitted that, talking to them about this area and the nature, suggested nature of this kind of window area
right.
overlap phenomena.
I would just love that her grandmother had a
warned
name for
her?
This. Yeah, the token idea when things, and we've covered this before, the mimics that lead you into the forest and pretend to be someone that you know.
Yeah.
Pretend to be someone that you trust.
Hey, where's my thing?
Yeah, I think the Schwartz Brewing flag is covering it up, but Tim Marjanko, disembodied voices.
That's somewhere. Oh, here we go.
Don't you knock things over.
And her new difficult studio setup.
That's not it.
The Book of Werewolves.
Is that what you're going for?
No.
A great book, though. There you go.
Yeah. Tim Marjanko, Disembodied Voices.
Excellent. Well-researched book.
The Lure, the Trap, and the Lost. Was that
yes.
what it was? Again, this idea of mimics, mimicking the voices, luring you into what? Into where? Is this just a trickster phenomena, having fun, playing jokes? Or does this tie into the idea of the missing?
And it just makes sense that this would be a phenomenon occurring in Adams County, in this area with all this other high strangeness stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it occurs everywhere, but I think specifically this area just has this kind of supernatural anchor, this energetic weight to it.
Yeah.
This Ohio River Valley space.
Yes. And I have one more tale, but I'd like to save it, Jeremy.
Okay.
Till after we talk about some of the Serpent Mound stuff that you have, because it kind of ties in to that fun theory I had. That revelation that occurred to me while on...
Oh, while on Serpent Mound.
While on the mound. Well, not on it, because that's...
You can't go
you
on
You can't
it.
Stand on it. That would be uncouth.
It's actually pretty amazing. You can, if you visit Serpent Mound, it's kind of cool, because it's like this historical landmark, but it feels very freewheeling in the sense that, like, you can walk right up to the mound.
It's inviting.
It's inviting. I mean, there's the energy there, of course. Like,
feels very alive.
I think I mentioned... Man, I don't know if we'll play any clips. We were kind of recorded it off the cuff, just some moments there. Maybe we'll play one. But yeah, the energy there, I remember just feeling oddly calm, like a drop of like the constant stress that I feel all the time. There, for some reason, it was gone, and I didn't even realize it until... And actually, I think this was not even Serpent Mound. It was another mound we randomly came across on the drive home, but Serpent Mound had that same kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Just this kind of release and grounded vibe. And it sounds woo-woo. Like, we're not super into woo-woo stuff, necessarily.
Or like energies.
Yeah. No offense to people who are...
Not that I disbelieve that stuff, but...
That's an offensive term to some people. I don't mean it like that, but...
Right.
But I'm skeptical by nature when it comes to anything that I actually feel like I might experience.
Well, also, there's less tactileness to the energy stuff for me. Even though I felt
some crazy stuff when we had that remote chakra.
And the Reiki. Reiki
thing that we had a great listener do a little remote Reiki work on me, which was I talked about before. I won't get back
you,
into it.
You and John had a similar experience.
Same. We both talked later and both our eyes were fluttering involuntarily. Anyway, crazy experience. But yeah, to carry on with the Serpent Mound energy concept, when I was standing there, right at the tail, the spiral is really cool, coils around. And at the end, there's an outlook, an overlook, right after that tail.
Right.
And looking down, I just had this thought, and this is just a fun idea, but that the crater that is there wasn't caused by a meteor impact, but was actually caused by a craft.
A craft?
It crashed eons ago into the valley there.
Okay.
I didn't do a lot of deep digging on this idea, but I thought it was kind of a fun idea. And that the people that created the mound, they were left with no technology. Everything had burned up in their craft. So, but they knew how to move dirt. So they made this mound as a memorial and sort of a sign. If you look at it, you've got the spiral, right? So if you want to look at
it's just the tail, right?
In the tail. If you want to look at it in the fun way, you've got tail, and that's like the wormhole. The ship
vortex.
Came through the vortex, and then the serpent is actually the trail, the path of the craft, and then where it landed at the head of this effigy, this animal effigy, is supposed to be the mouth, and then this egg is what some scholars believe is in the mouth of this thing. I think, indeed, that was just the craft.
Crash landed,
and then the mound that had come up around it was the mouth of the serpent. Anyway,
it's
a fun idea, but was interesting as I was standing there. Maybe you didn't find it interesting, but
I found it interesting.
I turned around from this thought and started to walk, and almost hit me in the face was this branch. And we'll have a picture of this in the show notes, but it is bizarre. There's a tree that comes out of a forest there, and almost as if it's reaching towards the spiral.
Yeah.
All these limbs of this tree, they don't go out and reach towards the sun over the valley exposed cliff.
Right,
face.
Where a tree might reach is towards the sunlight.
Instead, it reaches inland.
Like directly.
Through the woods.
Directly horizontal.
Yeah, and horizontal, reaching right towards the spiral. Again, this is just probably me extrapolating ideas.
Well,
but
I think
that's just what it felt like to me in the moment. So
I think even Graham Hancock, doesn't he? So we listened to his audiobook while we were there just to get in the vibe of the Serpent Mound.
He didn't mention any of that. I doubt that's the case.
But I think he mentioned vortexes in the area.
Yeah. Well, there's the idea of the Manitou, which is this kind of hard to describe. It's both aspects of the earth and spirit kind of god.
It's like an underlying
deity.
It exists in all things.
And it's a sort of serpent deity that is in a lot of tribal nations, I think throughout North America, not just down in the Ohio Valley. But yeah.
The Adena and the Hopewell.
And getting a little off track, but I wanted to touch on that because it ties into this next story. Is it okay if we go to the next story?
Yeah, let's do it. Why would you ask me permission?
And only if you think of an idea. I mean, you could also tie this into, well, you'll see. But this this is also from New Fork. This is called The Night Sky's Watchful Eye.
I had just begun an evening of stargazing in rural southern Ohio and was planning to start with sightings of Venus, Saturn, and Mars, which were grouped quite close together just after sunset on 8/7/10. I noticed the object in question while waiting for Venus to appear after sunset. In terms of brightness, it looked a lot like Venus, but it was way too high in the sky to be that planet, and its brightness was probably closer to that of Jupiter, which was not due to appear until much later in the evening. I thought perhaps it was a very bright star, but did not know what star it might be. To attempt to identify the object, I trained my 6-inch Dobsonian with low magnification on the object. What I saw was a disk, but not a disk in the sense of a flying saucer-type object seen edge-on. Rather, it was perfectly round, about the size of Jupiter on high magnification. It appeared to have some markings on it, somewhat similar to the light and dark areas seen on Mars when that planet is relatively close to the Earth. It did not appear to be moving at all. As I observed the object, I noticed it had a much smaller object which appeared to be circling it. Much as you might see the Gallian moons orbiting Jupiter, but the circling was not horizontal like a natural satellite, east-west, or west-east, but rather a vertical polar orbit. As I watched, the smaller object moved from about the 7 o'clock position on the main object up to the very top 12 o'clock position. What was even weirder was that the smaller object appeared to be attached to the main object by a line which was very thin but quite visible. All of this happened very quickly, in a matter of a few seconds, and after this brief observation, I was mystified as to what the object might be. I thought perhaps it might be some exotic satellite of which I was unaware. I took my eye from the telescope so I could just look at it to see if it was moving across the sky in a straight line at a steady rate with a steady brightness the way satellites do. But when I looked up, it had vanished. Satellites wink out when they enter the Earth's shadow and are no longer illuminated by the sun. But as far as I could tell, this object was not moving at all. Had it been moving, I would have almost certainly noticed some movement of the main object when I was looking at it through the telescope, since magnification also magnifies the perceived motion of an object across the sky. I have never seen anything like this, and I am at a loss as to what this object might have been. I was sober with my faculties intact when I observed it. If anyone has seen something similar or knows what it may have been, I would be interested in some feedback.
Yeah. Again, and in the same area, but I... this was fun for me because as I read this and I was thinking about this potential ancient crash. And the people maybe lost wayward from their home.
Homesick.
I don't know. Of course, the usage of the term satellite, it just made me think of like, you know, Dark Knight satellite. The idea of visitors coming and stationing something that is keeping an eye on such a special place. And that idea that there was something tethered to it, he could see through this magnification of his telescope. Just an interesting little addition to these encounters in this area.
So both of these were anomalous objects to him.
Yeah. Well, they were connected too, which was fascinating. And not moving like a traditional satellite.
Did he give a approximation of altitude?
He may have in here.
But he believed, or you interpret that as it being directly above Serpent Mound, Peebles area.
Well, it was certainly in view from there. I mean, I don't know.
I guess depending on the altitude, it could be in view from a lot of places.
That's true. If it was lower, but I think it was a little further out. So maybe you've just destroyed my entire fun hypothesis.
Either way, it's anomalous. I'm not saying, you know, if it's not necessarily...
Right. You have a better one?
Peebles direct.
You have one more tale to tell, don't you?
I do.
To the Serpent Mound?
Yes. Going back to the Serpent Mound connection, and I was not poo-pooing yours at all.
I mean, I kind of...
Either way, I thought it was a fascinating, anomalous account.
It's a fun idea.
Yeah. But a lot of these accounts, and some that you brought today, have this kind of theme of being visible on the ground and then becoming like a star.
Right.
Right? And we hear these kinds of reports a lot. This next story might remind you of... it kind of takes me back to like that famous crop circle alleged evidence.
Oh, the creation video of the crop circles where the two orbs are flying through the air.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll drop that here.
And I don't think that they've ever debunked it.
I don't think entirely.
It's still controversial and people have pushed back.
This is pre like, you know, heavy video editing for the masses sort of software.
Yeah. But this account, this comes actually from David Weatherly. His website called Eerie Lights. This occurs right over the Serpent Mound, which is why I was interested in it, because it pulls into that connection of...
the sacredness or the maybe interstellar sacredness?
Not necessarily even interstellar, but anomalous...
Yeah, that's true.
...non-human technology, energies, whatever it is, something very tangible in the sense that it was very visible and unsettling to the people who witnessed it. This took place, as I said, right above Serpent Mound in Adams County. And like you mentioned, the origin of Serpent Mound, I guess it's important to reiterate, still kind of remains a mystery.
Yeah.
Controversial, but people debate it. It was documented initially in the 1840s. And the museum, if you guys do visit, it goes into detail about that. The history itself is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And that, that's the thing too. Like whenever there is an alternative explanation or something far older, like someone like Graham Hancock would suggest, it doesn't diminish the people that it might be attributed to, even if maybe they didn't actually build the Serpent Mound. It doesn't diminish the works and the things that they did create.
Right. That's not the intention of the
right
other theory.
And I think that
it seems to be the method of debunking.
For shutting down any alternative conversation.
Yeah, for people that may have a vested interest, like mainstream historians, anthropologists, archaeologists who've, you know, staked their reputation and their history, all the books they may have written or contributed to based on this theory that it's attached to this people, the go-to is, well, you're diminishing these people. You're a hateful person.
Right. Well, not to say that that's always the motive, like a fear of...
No.
Especially in these
But I would argue that it rarely or never is the motive of the people who are presenting the ideas that they want it to be not this specific people.
It does become like sort of just a red herring.
Red herring, yeah. Anyway, point being, studies on the 1990s suggest that it may be a much earlier construction.
Mm-hmm.
But since its recognition, and since recorded history in the area, there have been a plethora of sightings.
Ooh.
Directly connected with the mound. Could it be like you said? Well, maybe not a crashed craft, but...
You never know.
Something or someone still visiting, still keeping a watchful eye. So this account you're about to hear was received by the Ohio Exploration Society, and I highly recommend you guys check out their website. They've been very helpful and communicative with us. This account occurred in 2014, and the sender of the account wished to remain anonymous. And you'll hear why, because the location is obviously a historic landmark, and they may have been breaking the law.
Ooh.
Well, trespass, as much as that is breaking the law. Anyways, they wish to remain anonymous. This account is called Anomalous Lights Over Serpent Mound.
My girlfriend and I had heard a lot of stories from friends about the Serpent Mound and strange things going on out there. My cousin had told me that he'd seen a UFO himself out near the mound, and we were really curious to see if we could spot one. We were out near the park one night. Some friends of my cousin live out near it, and the three of us decided to go in. Honestly, I knew that we were not supposed to be in there, but we didn't get on the mound or anything. We just walked into the parking area to do some sky watching. We were only there for about 10 or 15 minutes when we heard this weird buzzing sound. It was like the sound of an electrical vibration. We were looking all around, trying to identify the source, but it sounded like it was coming from above us. My girlfriend was getting freaked out. She thought we were going to get into some real trouble. We went up to the little museum on the chance that that sound was somewhere there, but it was, of course, closed. The walkway from there leads over to the mound, and there's a viewing tower right by the mound. That's when we realized the sound was getting louder. And that's when we spotted them. There were these three round orange balls of light hovering right above the Serpent Mound. From where we were, I'd guess they were roughly the size of basketballs, but it looked like they kept expanding and getting bigger, then contracting and getting smaller, back to their original basketball size. The changing size could have been a trick of the light, because as we were standing there, these three orange lights were going back and forth over the length of the serpent. They were tracking the line that the serpent follows. They were all in a line, and there was at least a couple of feet or more between them. They did this pattern a bunch of times, picking up speed as they went back and forth. We were all frozen to the spot watching. But then my girlfriend made a sound. It was sort of both a cry and a gasp at the same time. What's weird is when she did this, the orange lights suddenly stopped in midair. They just hovered there only for a few seconds. Then suddenly, they shot straight up into the sky. They went so high and so straight up that in a second or two, we couldn't see them at all. They had just faded into the sky. We hightailed it out of there as fast as we could, all swearing that we would never go back. It was exciting, but it was really scary at the time. The other thing I remember is there was this strange smell, like the air was burned. We all felt like those lights were aware of us before they took off.
Oh man, awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have played that one earlier. That kind of ties right into the importance of the Serpent Mound.
Yeah, well, it was connected to the Serpent Mound, so I was waiting until we got into the Serpent Mound a bit. But yeah, just imagine that scene. You're there exploring at night, and these objects obviously tied to the importance.
Well, they're following the trail of the serpent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. And it does that. That's shooting up. I think we talked about this recently.
Yeah.
But that such a classic.
Orbs, with orbs specifically.
Yeah. Oh, Camp Creepley coming up. I believe we have an account like that.
Yeah.
So bizarre. There's something to it. And obviously, Will the Wisps or something
right.
as mundane as...
Ignis Fauta.
Yeah. Or ball lightning is often
yeah.
used to explain. We still don't really even understand what that is. But the nature of it seeming to be sentient and maneuvering along with another and then zipping up. That's
exactly.
such a key feature
yeah.
with these things.
And so he followed up a little bit more on the website from Ohio Exploration Society. You guys can check it out. He believed that the objects he saw were metallic in nature, but that was at their core, and they were surrounded by this orange light. That's kind of the perspective that he had. But
reminds me of that orb over, was it Baghdad in the last few years? The security footage, just following it. No propulsion, visible,
oh, yeah, yeah.
just a metal sphere.
The sphere.
Zipping through the air.
Just without the light.
Yeah, for miles.
But what's interesting is that there's a similar account I found on New Fork, trying to find some corroborative stuff.
In the area?
Yeah, along the Peach Mountain Paranormal Pathway,
oh, nice.
You might call it.
Nice alliteration.
It actually took place in Wheelersburg, which you may remember from Jim's account with the craft that canted and then took off.
Cantered.
Cantered?
Canted?
Canted.
I can't remember.
So it was a new word for me,
yeah.
But a cool word. I love words.
Okay.
Anyway, I won't go into crazy detail, but this other account took place in 2014 in Wheelersburg, and they saw three reddish orange spheres flew east to west across the sky over their house. They appeared to be at the height of a small aircraft, which you hear a lot in these accounts, either tree height or, you know, it's close enough. It's not a star.
Right.
They flew over one at a time and disappeared one at a time. And this is kind of the important part, they disappeared by going vertical and becoming a brilliant white light. Again, another glowing orb or pair or three orbs in this case in the same area coalescing and shooting off into the sky vertically into space. In this case, they were silent, not moving very fast, which reminds me of, you know, kind of caressing curvature of the serpent.
Giving homage.
They had pictures on their cell phone, but unfortunately, New Fork, they don't have attached images.
Oh.
Which is a bummer.
I think I figured out how to find those before.
Really?
So maybe we'll do it after the show.
Maybe we'll drop it in if you can find it.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. I mean, I don't know if we've proven that this is a containment area of anomalous anomalies.
There's enough to suggest that it is.
There's more than meets the eye.
It's a special region. I think especially with the Serpent Mound being built in that ancient meteor impact. There's a publication in Earth and Planetary Science Letters that I found online that discusses the origin by impact. And the special geological nature of the Earth, they're just...
The geomagnetic properties, right?
Yeah, underneath the Earth. And these properties are amplified, create amplified geomagnetic anomalies.
And compasses don't work there or something?
Yeah, I mean, there's reports of compasses going haywire and that kind of stuff, you know, a la the Bermuda Triangle and these kinds of places.
Right.
But we won't get into all that. And I really feel like we need to go back down there.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a long episode and... Probably should have split it into two. We didn't know what we're getting into. And there's so much in my notes here. I probably have twice the outline here than we've been able to get into with my research. So we might have to revisit. And it's close by, so.
Yeah, when we did, I don't know if we are going to put this in the episode or maybe just for members, a little behind the scenes of us attempting to record this episode on location down in McDermott, which is right, I think, just north of Portsmouth.
Right, an Airbnb, the Roundabout House, which was kind of creepy, but awesome.
Yeah, and so this is... extra creepy. So I was just looking online for information about Peebles, and I forget what I was searching specifically, but it just popped up this one Facebook post. And the Facebook post is titled, or queries, "You grew up in Peebles, Ohio, if you remember blank." And you know, everyone says, well,
right,
I remember, you know, the bus driver that was mean to me or whatever. Their response was, "Driving up to Peach Mountain to get to the Roundhouse."
Oh.
"And getting the crap scared out of you."
Really?
And so I read a little bit. I'm just going to read a few quotes from this, if that's okay.
Yeah, please do.
Quote, Kathy says, "I can remember going and trying to act like I wasn't scared, but I was probably the biggest chicken of the bunch. LOL.
Oh, Kathy.
When a bunch of times I can remember telling everyone we have to wait till exactly midnight to walk up there.
someone else's freaky place. So I'm starting to get the feeling like that there was lore here just from the locals being here. And it was creeping me out because we stayed in the roundabout house.
Yeah.
Jackie says, I was just about to post this. Went there once after I saw the animal skulls in that shed.
What? Oh, but really? The shed that was on the property?
I wasn't about to go back.
Wow.
Hundreds of them. Scrolling down.
No way.
Scrolling down. this part was like, what? Kathy continues, the writing on the walls inside was scary.
Wait, of the house or the shed?
I took pictures of that and my mom found them and burnt them.
God.
LOL. Anyways, it goes on and on.
We're going back to this place.
Yeah. And then someone says, I know those people were devil worshippers because I found letters and poems written by family that lived there. And they were pure evil.
Hmm.
Now, this is very local urban legendy.
Yeah.
But they go on to reference, like, some people say pentagrams scrawled on the, you know, the windows. Explain that to me. And then people start debating in here. You know, those poems were written by professors, allegedly, at Shawnee University or something. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, they're poems. They're not, you know, devil worshippers or whatever. They go back and forth. And one person says, my brother or something was responsible for killing animals and putting the skulls in there for a laugh to scare people. And then the other person said, okay, you know, don't attack me here. I'm just giving my opinion.
Right, but, the typical Facebook feed
there
thing.
But there are, you know, 400 skulls. Like, is it really just your brother doing it? Anyway, they go back and forth on this, and it's this kind of Facebook drama and people being attacked about their opinions about that. Anyways, I'll post the link in the show notes. But the point is, this place already had a lot of lore and a lot of even just that kind of cool, fun, local vibe of strangeness. But I will say, Chris, and I'll show you, there are apparently a lot of roundhouses.
Oh, okay.
In this area.
Not necessarily the one that the awesome one we stayed in?
We stayed at this awesome Airbnb in McDermott.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The Roundabout House, which isn't far.
Yeah.
But this was the Roundhouse.
Okay.
In Peebles, which I don't know if it's, someone said it burned down or whatever. Anyways, occult activity, were people cashing in on the energetic nature, or was this just an urban legend? You do have now, we were looking for places to stay in Peebles. We were looking for campgrounds or whatever. And they're one of the like few places you could stay is, I wish I had the name of it.
The retreat, sort of a...
Yeah.
Energy.
You call it a hippie commune kind of retreat.
Right.
But it's all about like energy and
transcendentalism,
spirituality. And it's, I haven't seen a lot of these places, especially in Ohio, that you can go stay at this kind of retreat. It's just interesting that it's, makes sense. It's tucked so closely near
the
Serpent Mound. And that's not to say there's anything negative about that place.
Oh, yeah.
Just that they recognize probably the special nature of the earth there.
Yeah. As do interdimensional beings. We will be going back. We hope you guys will come back to the Belief Hole and join us in the expansion.
Yes.
And we hope you dug this episode. Peach Mountain has many more trails to be traversed.
Many more secrets to be revealed.
Won't you come along with us?
Yeah, join us, guys. And hope you dug this episode.
John will be back next time.
John will be back. We've missed him dearly, but he did join us in the stories, which we appreciated.
Yeah, you'll hear him in the expansion, so head on over. And until next time.
We'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.
On the Belief Hole.